So welcome once again to one of the East Meets West Spotlight series, and this time it will be introducing the Daylight Bank, the first LGBTIQ bank in US, probably even in the world. I don't know, we'll talk about it later on. To those who are listening to us and watching us, the East Meets West is an NGO situated in Vienna, working especially with Central East European countries. But we also look at the rest of the world, that is clear. And when we see sometimes, let's say, things happening in the world, we want to have this, we capture this, and we want to share it with our, with the people that follow us also, because many things are happening. It's very important that we share this, that some things are get the attention they deserve. Yeah, that's very clear. And today we have a special treat, because you have, for me personally, also a combination. On the one hand, we talk about our community, LGBTI community, and on the other hand, we have a topic that I've been working on my whole life. Luckily, it's finished now, and that is banking, something we are all confronted with, positively, negatively, and we have there something quite new. And I'm happy, very happy to introduce to you today Rob Curtis. Hello, Rob. This is the co-founder and the CEO of Daylight. We have to talk about the name too, because it's very mysterious. And he is the one who really will start a first LGBTIQ bank. And they say, I'm reading now, it's a new bank that is catering to underserved LGBTIQ customers, and they want to bridge the gap that traditional banks have created. Just a small introduction for those who are not in, let's say, very familiar with the world of banking. Most people, I hope at least for them. We've seen all, especially in Europe now, we've seen in the last 5, 6, 7 years, suddenly pop up a lot of smaller banks, neobanks, banks that cater a specific target. And most of them in Europe were, in fact, banks that were based on the digital innovation. They were cheaper, they were faster, they were nicer. It was all less complicated, and they wanted to get a different type of banking away from the big buildings with 500 branches and everything. This we have seen. What we haven't seen so much, especially in Europe, or not at all, I think, is banks that really focus on a specific, let's say, minority, an underserved minority. In the US, you have it for, I think, for Black people, for Latinos, you have it for immigrants, and now we have this new kid on the block. And that is where you come in, Rob. So welcome to this podcast. My first question is very simple, because you might be known by many people, but for us, you're not known yet. So my question is, who is Rob Curtis? And when did this idea of creating an LGBTIQ bank came? When was it created, in fact?
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that lovely introduction, Ludo. So I'm Rob Curtis, CEO and co-founder of Daylight. A little bit about me. So I'm a gay man. I'm very lucky to have had a wonderful experience as an LGBT person, you know, with all of the ups and downs that come with it. I was born in Australia and have just finished 15 years in London before I've moved off to the States. So I'm actually calling in from Mexico right now, where I'm staying with my fiance's family, which is very nice and very warm.
I will not ask anything about the weather, believe me. No, I will not. When I look outside, gray, wet, chilly Belgium, no, thank you.
So my career has really been in two halves. So the first half of it was, it kind of began in economic policy in the Australian government, focused on employment and migration. And then I did a series of kind of digital and technology projects over many years in London on a consulting basis. So some of my greatest hits include building the national election system, transforming a series of institutes, the Institute of Engineering, Institute of Actuaries. And I was also responsible at Prudential PLC for auditing their regulatory change projects across the globe. So off of the back of 2008, lots of new regulation and my job was to go around, make sure that all of those projects were on track and that the company was on track to meet its compliance obligations. My last job in the corporate world was implementing a Temenos banking system at a merchant bank in London. So I spent plenty of time in regulated environments, and I was privileged enough to get to meet lots and lots of interesting people across different domains. And then a number of years ago, I was invited in to do a turnaround on a company called Gaydar. Now, many people will know what gaydar is, but it was, when I arrived, it was a 20-year-old LGBT dating and social networking platform. And the way we used to describe it was that before gaydar came along in 1999, LGBT people used to have to find each other in bars, bushes, public toilets, wherever they could. The internet was a transformative event for our lived experience. And we often used to say we got gay men out of the bushes and into the living room. And that may sound vulgar to many of you, but I think the key thing here is that we used to live very dangerous lives just trying to find one another. And it wasn't that long ago. The year gaydar had started, Ellen was kicked off of television for being a lesbian. So putting aside her most recent troubles, we've come a very long way. And so I was brought in at gaydar to help the company to understand how it would need to change in order to be suitable for what the community expected in 2018 rather than what they expected in 1999. So since then, I've been an entrepreneur focused very solely on LGBT community for one really important reason, which is that we are underserved in lots of interesting ways in our adult lives, and yet it remains a largely untapped market in some really important areas. So I am determined to affect social change through technology, through business, and that's what got me to Daylight.
Perfect. I mean, you said technology now. I mean, this technology seems to be quite important. And I read also in some articles, you have this fast track program that somehow also pushed your idea of an LGBT bank forward. I mean, what is this fast track program?
Yeah, so the idea of an LGBT bank is not a new one. Yeah. I think for at least a generation, people have been talking about it, but nobody's figured out a way to make that work. And so, you know, I like to take on big challenges. We set out at the beginning of this year, just after the lockdown had started in COVID, to understand what an LGBT bank would need to do. Because Ludo, as you say, there are plenty of new challenger banks who can come along, they can build fast, they can use superior technology, and they can focus on the customer. And so we wanted to take some of the real technical know-how that we had from a company in Vacuum Labs in Slovakia and to try and build a bank off of it. So we spoke to over 1,000 LGBT people to understand how they use money, where their pain points are, and so on. And that's ultimately what's led us to understand how we need to solve problems for the LGBT people. I'll go into some of those pain points shortly, but I think your question around the Visa FinTech Fast Track program comes about because we approached the two major network providers and we said, there's going to be two names on our card. One of them is going to be ours and one of them is going to be yours. Now, this is a huge opportunity for you to demonstrate your LGBT credibility. If you want to work with us, then this isn't just about putting a rainbow on your brand. This is about rolling up your sleeves and getting things done. And so the FinTech Fast Track program is both an opportunity to help us take off. It's run by Visa, so they connect us with lots of really interesting people, but also is an opportunity for us to go into the future of FinTech and start educating them on why inclusivity matters and how they can design for it.
But I mean, was it difficult to let's say to convince them to do this? Because we know many companies have this let's say LGBTIQ friendliness, and you have I saw it also the thing is that this element of being LGBTQ is not only in June when there's the pride, it's the whole world, it's the whole life, the whole year. Was it difficult to convince them? Because very often these corporates, they want to do something, they want to even give money, but when it comes really to the essence of what they do, they just don't go so far. So was this possible even in your case with Visa?
It was. And I think, Ludo, we've had very different experiences as LGBT people from different parts of the world and really from different times in which we grew up LGBT. And one thing I've observed, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, is that we've reached a point as LGBT people where people take us a little bit more seriously than they used to. Funnily enough, I think the traditional roles have been reversed a little bit. So while fundraising represents its own set of challenges, I think it wasn't that long ago that I used to conceal my sexuality in the workplace. Yes. Because I used to conceal it to the outside world for safety reasons. And then once that got okay, I would conceal it within the workplace. And then as I became an entrepreneur focusing on LGBT markets, that was an uphill battle. Whereas what it feels like more recently is People are listening. I think the years of denying that LGBT people exist have passed. People can, they can kick and scream like Trump with the election, but at the end of the day, we are here, we are not going anywhere. And when you present LGBT inclusion, not just as a social justice issue, but as a business issue, people's ears listen and their ears perk up. And if you look at America, people think, okay, an LGBT community, why would we need a specific bank that serves that community? Well, we can go into that, but you know, are there enough of them to make money? Well, actually, there are more LGBT people in America than there are Australians in the world, and the spending power of LGBT Americans is greater than Australia's GDP. So this is a really significantly sized market of people that have been left behind. And so when I stand up in front of banks and payment providers and others and I say, there's 30 million people that you're not serving well, you know that they need to be served because you market to them extensively in June. Why won't you treat them seriously from a product perspective? Suddenly they go, huh, actually, maybe that's right. And increasingly, we found tactics can work really well to get people to engage with us. So often I'll talk to investors and I'll ask, do you have children? And I'll say yes. And I said, if your child had been told that they were sinful, going to die early and had no future for the first 20 years of their life, how do you think they're going to come out? And suddenly, the magnitude of the lived experience of LGBT people starts to cut through. And I think people, there is a safety in business now to look at LGBT people as a business opportunity, but there's also a kind of wider social change that means people have more empathy for our community. We've got a long way to go, but we can tap into that to get things done.
I think this is something that also in one of the previous podcasts, we talked about corporate social responsibility. And I was afraid to ask the people, I say, look, guys, aren't you afraid with what is happening now with the COVID and everything, that they will reduce this activity? And the conclusion of the people that knew would say, look, the companies that are clever, the companies that see the future, the companies have a chance in the future, are the ones that even take it more serious now because they see an opportunity. And this is totally what you say. It's clearly like this. And the hiding is over. We're no longer victims. We are stand there 2 feet on the ground and we're not afraid anymore. I think this is a very powerful attitude. And this is also clearly what you say is clear, what we also see around us everywhere. I'm very happy about it because I know, I mean, I'm older than you. So what you said about bars and bushes, my God, yes. That was the life. And this is now, at least we don't have to do it anymore. Clear, it's clear. One thing I want to ask you is, of course, you are now an LGBTIQ bank. You want to have that. What makes you different? I mean, because there are many banks and very often they can say, we do this, we do that. I worked in a big bank and every time we were saying the same as the competitors did. We are faster, we do this and that. Where are you, in fact, where do you want to be different as a bank? What do you want to have? What is your let's point of interest for the clients?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Ludo. So let's just get on the same page about the state of LGBT money. We've spoken to a lot of LGBT people and we've learned one really important thing. LGBT people aren't preparing for the future fast enough. Now, if we just kind of step back for a second and look at that statement, is it a big surprise that we're not looking towards retirement when we're being socialized young to think that our healthcare will stop us from getting to old age? We've not had the ability to plan big milestones and fulfilling futures in the way that we do now. And so as a result, I often kind of think of my own experience. In the age of 20, I wasn't thinking about the future. I was trying to figure out how to be an LGBT person in a world that wasn't designed for me. And so we estimate somewhere between a 5 and 7 year delay for LGBT people getting their finances in order. And even then, they're going to face a bit of an uphill battle. So let me kind of break this into three areas for you. So number one, it costs more to be LGBT. We probably understand this intuitively, but we don't really talk about it as a community. We face, and I'm going to use some American data for you. So the moment we come out to our parents, we're 40% less likely to get financial support. That's a massive decrease. So when you look at LGBT people in America, they have about 50% more college debt. If you're trans or non-binary, you have the cost of transitioning. If you want to change your name on a card or on a bill, you might have to see a judge, a doctor, and a notary. All of those things cost money. And then by the time we start getting into our older lives, we want to have kids. The average cost of a child for an LGBT person in the States is $55,000 each. Now, that's before we've educated them, clothed them, or fed them. That's just the cost of bringing a young person into the world. So we face throughout our life journey from the time that we're young through the middle years and into retirement significantly higher costs than everybody else. I think the latest data shows that it's about 40% more expensive for an LGBT person to retire in a destination of their choice. And those choices are often around safety and community. So we're on the back foot. We've got a lot of costs that are not being thought about by the wider world and probably not even thought about by our entire community as a whole. And then we go into the world with that set of disadvantages, and we struggle to play catch-ups. So LGBT people, about half of LGBT people struggle to save regularly. Now that's versus about 38% of the non-LGBT community. So we don't have the best habits. We're probably not going to go and ask our dad for money advice. Then by the time we go into banks, we're more likely to be rejected for loans. And then when we are awarded a loan, we pay higher fees. So we go into the world with a system that is not designed to support us at all and isn't even having the conversation with us about how our needs are unique. And so as a result, we're forced to make these really difficult choices. And here are the kinds of things that we've heard from people in their 30s. You can have a baby or a home, pick one. Because it's going to cost you either way, and you're going to have to choose where to allocate your resources. Now, that's terrible. How are we going to be able to live fulfilling futures that we'd like to have if we just can't afford them? And I think over time, this stuff matters. We have significantly lower rates of home ownership, and about half of us are worried about having enough money in retirement. Now, what that means is that LGBT money needs to be handled differently, and those stats are based on the last 5 years. So incumbent banks have had a long time to prepare for LGBT people. We've always been there. They've been marketing to us, but the furthest that they've gotten on product development for us is to put rainbows on things. Advertising at Pride and rainbows on cards. Now, that's lovely, but that's not actually going to resolve any of those pain points that are the real things that matter to our community. And I think that's the reason, Detra, why we believe an LGBT bank is not only important, but is essential for our community, because the next frontier for equality for our community has to be looking at wealth, because there's no point having all of the rights that we want if we can't then turn that into an equivalently fulfilling life. And there's lots of opportunities for fulfillment as LGBT people, but choices like a family or a home are pretty tough for us, and we need different types of support, and I think that's the space that Daylight would like to get into.
I think that means, in fact, that you look also, when you look at the client, you talk to a client, you have different timelines than the other clients. For instance, I suppose that if people want to have a baby, it's 9 months. When we want to have a baby, it might be more expensive and longer. Let's say the timelines are different, our targets are different. That is something I suppose you have to discuss with your clients in the bank, so you look in a different way and you understand it better. Yeah, is that also one of the reasons why? And I saw this: you don't have financial advisors who are regulated and managed. You have financial coaches, and you call it life coaches for your money. Does this fit this, that you talk the same language?
Yeah. So here's the thing: when I was the CEO of Gator, I was offered an LGBT financial advisor. This is a regulated financial advisor. Yeah. And I'm going to talk about how much of a transformative experience that was. Because that was the first time that I'd begun to realize some of the pain points that we described earlier, that the system was stacked against us. And having somebody that understood my lived experience, this was an LGBT person, who understood that I'm going to have to think about estate planning differently and retirement differently, and lots of these very boring and unsexy things very differently, that put an emphasis on my investing and my saving earlier, because I knew that I was going to have to save at a faster rate than my brothers would, for example. And we've looked at, you talked about the timeline. So we kind of break down, the LGBT people, the LGBT community has an incredible diversity. There's no one timeline. And I think that's one thing that banks get really wrong. Yes. They assume that you're either the straight couple or you're the single lady, right? There's not much in between. So instead, what we are looking at is what's the average life of an LGBT person? And what we've discovered early on in our lives is two things. So one is we're not saving enough, which I think applies to lots of people, but especially LGBT people. So we need to improve that. And the second is that our attitudes towards money and our mental health around money are very different as well. So we've put in place LGBT financial coaches, and really what they're designed to do is to deal with them with the habits that we've got. So why is it that we don't like to put our money at risk and save on an index fund, for example? Many of us are in survival mode. We're still caught in the world of, if I don't have a little bit of extra cash, I may be thrown out into the world, fired from my job and kicked out from my parents' home. So I'm going to need that reserve in order to stop myself from being homeless. And this kind of survival mentality gets in the way of a growth mentality, which is really important for us if we're going to feather our nests later in life, because we're going to need to grow that money and put a little bit of it at risk. So we use coaching to sit down with people to understand what's going on there. Because if that is just a mindset challenge, then educating them on how putting a little bit of money at risk in order to grow it is part of what they can do. The second part of it is just looking at their money habits. You know, developing a regular pattern of putting money away is essential for paying down debt and achieving any long-term goal. So our focus really at the beginning is on understanding why people aren't saving enough, helping them to create space in their life to make sure they've got a financial buffer, that they've got good spending habits, and tapping them into the wider community of other LGBT people that they can learn from. So that's why we've started with coaching. I think as we get into demonstrated patterns of savings, and we've got more of a deposits book, that investment and growing your money is going to be much more important. But right now we're starting with those people that don't have, say, more than $2,000 in savings in their entire wealth, and that need a little bit of help in order to grow that amount.
I like what you say, and I always, what I do is when somebody says a thing like this, I will look at my own situation. And indeed, I mean, I always said that I'm okay as a gay man to go to my bank. I have no problem with it. And indeed, they have no problem putting two names, my husband and me, on the account and everything. But what you say about timelines, of course, I'm now at the end, so I'm profiting now of what I saved traditionally. But I can imagine that my bank does not think in that way. The timeline they have is a traditional man, woman, or single person timeline. And if I come with my baby, they don't understand it. I really can't understand it. That is something that they never, that I've never seen. And I think is also unique as a approach. Absolutely. Another question I have is, and you know, every bank, when you start any business or any bank or whatever you want to do, you want at a given moment, you want to reach, certainly as a bank, a retail bank, you want to reach a critical mass of clients. You need them, a critical mass of clients. Otherwise, it will not work. Now, you have certainly the figures, and I look here now, as you said already, there's $1 trillion spending power in the US. Many people have, you have really needs in the community. So my question on the one hand is, do you see a possibility to reach that critical mass? And on the other hand, you also say, and you also mentioned that, you seem to target underbanked, low-income members of the community. Normally, that is, if you say we want to help them, underbanked, and not always the ones that are with the big income. Now, that also means that how are you going to make profit? Because and basic thing is, if you have, or you have, in most of the banks, you have 100 people that are client, 10% bring you the money, the rest helps you to survive, and one part is then the losing one. But most of the time you have these people that bring you the money, and you know very well who they are, the VIP ones or whatever they call them. Do you have, with this approach to the type of clients that you want to focus, also the possibility to have a relatively good a critical mass, at the same time be profitable?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Ludo, here's the way we look at it. Building a bank is a massive endeavor that's going to take time. Citibank wasn't born overnight. They started somewhere. And so I think the question for us has been less, is there a big enough opportunity, and is there the potential to reach critical mass? We don't have a doubt about that. 30 million people is a significant proportion of the world. And even if just half of them used our bank, we'd have 15 million customers, right? So, and that is great. And the other thing is that our population is growing over time. So, you know, as each generation comes along, there are more LGBT people. And as older generations start to pass on, what we find is that those lower rates of self-reporting on LGBT actually decline. So we know that there is a market. That's not a doubt to us. Yeah. And if there was any proxy that we need, is look around at every company in the world and look at how much they spend on acquiring LGBT customers. They're doing that for a reason, because they know that we are a wealthy and large segment that they've not managed to get to. We're also a fairly political one, so it's important to keep us on side. I think the bigger question for us this year was, where do we start? And so we started with our customers. Banks a lot of the time just try and sell a product. They've got a product and they just try and sell it. So they think about their products a lot more. That's why when you talk to banks, they talk about credit cards and loans and overdrafts and things like that. Now, those are tools. But when you organize your company just around your tool, then you're leaving the customer out of the equation. And yes. So we spoke to 1,000 LGBT people and we learned some really important things. So there are a group at the top part of our community who pretty much have the resources to navigate through the complexity of being an LGBT person.
Yes.
They're doing okay. They're probably quite wealthy. They've probably got good jobs, possibly two incomes, no children. We've heard the stereotypes of this kind of rich set of LGBT people. But when you start getting into the middle and lower end of the market, there are people that have money that don't even have the advice. So regulated financial advisory tends to go towards people at the top end, maybe $300,000 a year or more. There's a group of people that earn significantly less than that who still have a lot of money. $120,000 a year is not a small amount of money, and they're not putting it to good use. So our goal is to take the tools, the hints, the resources that the most wealthy in our community have and distribute those and make that available to people that might be a little bit more like you and I, who we have great earning potential. Maybe we don't have millions in the bank right now. And I don't know your financial situation, Ludo, but so forgive me if I'm getting that wrong. But we could benefit from opportunities to take the resources that we've got and to make them more effective. So rather than thinking about us as not dealing with people that have money, I think our goal is to take the superpowers that the wealthiest of us have and make them available to the rest of the market. I guess the second thing we've learned is that when you get to below about $50,000 a year, your habits, your behaviors, your mindset change really significantly. It's actually kind of consistent above that amount, how people view their money. Below $50,000 is a really, really different set of challenges. These are people living on the breadline. If they're queer people of color, maybe one in five doesn't have a bank account. Yeah. So these people have really, really different challenges. And so when we talked to our customers, we understand that almost no one in our community wants to do well just for themselves without trying to do well for the community at the same time. It's this really funny thing. I think we recognize that we didn't get here alone. And while some of us are still very selfish and just want to make sure we are protected first and foremost, most people want to work with an institution that's doing good. And so our goal is to, what we always talk about internally, have our cake and eat it. How do we serve the wealthiest amongst us and the middle of the market so that we've got a steady flow of income that helps us to grow as a business while also finding ways that we can support the unbanked and underbanked and the people that are much more disadvantaged? And we've got some really interesting ways to do that. So, for example, you may not know this, but the number one funder of health costs for the trans community is GoFundMe. That is how our trans siblings are, for the most part, paying for their transitions. So we know that it's mostly LGBT people redistributing wealth amongst themselves in order to support other people to achieve their goals. And so we want to tap into dynamics of how our community really works. We support each other. We donate to charities. We donate to galas. We spend our time trying to help others. And so we want to bring some of those values into our platform because it's not just a nice thing to do. It's actually what our customers are asking us to do. So that gives us opportunities to serve the middle of the market over time, building an investment book for the top of the market, but also to be able to share some of our personal wisdom and even some of our own wealth with members of our community that need the help the most.
Perfect. No, this is what I want to hear. In fact, this is something that I expect because I also read that you really want to be active for the community. It's almost like somehow a kind of a cooperative situation where you are, the people put together the power to get the community stronger and more defensive. I think it's what normal. And it's also something that you see also in other banks, because other banks now want to be green. They all want to plant trees everywhere and they want to do this and that. But it's, you know, it's very often all it's only the surface. Yeah. Under it, they're just money diggers, you know that. And that is the big difference, probably, what you are doing. And this is what I think the community also understands quite well. A question that has been put here on my page, and I don't want to lose it. Mm. You changed your name. The first time I heard about you, it was about LGBT bank, or LGBT money, whatever. And now suddenly I see this wonderful, fresh name of Daylight. It almost looks like, I thought in the beginning it was the name of a new Chinese car. because they also have this kind of names, yeah? Where does the name change come from? What's the reason for it?
Yeah, so we started off with the name B-Money, which was designed to help us get off of the ground, but was also built on this idea of how do we be ourselves?
Yeah.
We tested that name, and it didn't test very well for a couple of reasons. One, it's very difficult to do SEO on a name like B-Money. So it's difficult for people to find you. But in the States, there is an increasing drive away from capitalism. And the idea of being money doesn't appeal to large parts of our own population that are a little bit more radical. So we decided that we're going to learn a little bit from our customers, and we're going to build a brand that was the kind of brand that LGBT people are looking for today. So let me tell you a little bit about that. LGBT people have told us that they are tired of activism for activism's sake. It's 2020 has been a pretty tough year, and people don't want brands pointing out how wrong things are unless they're really dedicated to fixing those problems. So they wanted a little bit of activism, but they wanted that activism applied in targeted ways that were going to solve real problems. That's why we're not Rainbow Bank or Pride Bank or any of these kind of like very low-hanging fruit on LGBT naming. That's really not what we've tried to do. The second is really kind of tapping into that idea that we're the first generation that can live openly. And so people are looking for optimism. They want hope. They want to know that all of these experiences that they've maybe had as, you know, people of our age are going to pay off in positivity. And for younger people, Gen Z, they've never had to experience some of the disadvantage we have, and they don't get it. They expect a positive life with a fulfilling future. So we wanted to build a brand around those two things. So we chose the word daylight. And there's kind of two things that I think of it. I think of it as a bit of a political statement, Lugo. So number one, even though everyone has denied it, LGBT people are everywhere the sun shines. We've always been there. We're not going away. Choosing to take something as bold as daylight is partly a way of telling the outside world that we're unapologetic about our queerness. We can be, and we're not here to make excuses. We don't need to be ghettoized under a rainbow. We are looking for a bright future. But the second thing is, I think, is a kind of follow on from that, is this idea of, you know, we've come out of the closet and we're into the daylight. So we are no longer having to demonstrate hiding behaviors by default. We deserve bright, bold, optimistic, hopeful futures. And so we decided to build a bank that that was a statement of intent about what our community deserves.
Well, there's one question that I still have. I find it a great name. Believe me, I find it a great name. But, you know, we also, in what I'm doing together with my colleague Pavel also, is we work also on LGBT businesses to work on that field in our community. And we want to use LGBT businesses to create role models of people that are in business, that are successful, as a kind of examples for the rest to make us role models of, look, we can do this too. Now, one of the things that we see also is it is always this coming out of people. Yeah, people coming out, we do it not once in your life, you do it thousands of times in your life, every time when you identify yourself. Now, if somebody will come with a card and it's mentioned daylight, is there somewhere a possibility, I don't know, possibility, but that people say, well, you know, I will openly say now here with my card and with my account that I'm gay. Is there a certain risk that people say, I don't want to come out, I want to go to the bank, but I want to have it more, let's say, hidden? Is that still an open, because you give the impression, and it is true, that we are much more open and we don't are afraid anymore, but there are still a lot of people that are still struggling with coming out. Yeah,
indeed. Yeah. So I think that's really important. We have designed Daylight to speak to LGBT people, but not necessarily to signal it very clearly. Yeah. So if you look at our card, it's bright yellow. Bright yellow is not a color traditionally associated with the LGBT community, but it stands out. The second is, and you may notice this only if you pointed to it, the D in our logo is a rainbow on its side. It's the only time you'll see a rainbow in our branding and marketing, because we don't think it means as much as people as it used to. Everyone's got a rainbow on their things now, particularly in June. So what we wanted to do is to be able to provide a facility for those people that are really loud and proud to be able to notice and identify with other LGBT people at the point of sale. So a bright yellow card is our way of doing that. We have interviewed many customers And we asked them, we wanted to understand to what extent this would be important. So we asked if you could choose a card and you had two options, one of them was loud and proud and the other one was stylish and discreet, which one would you choose? And we got about a 50-50 split down the middle. And so we know that we have different audiences to cater for. You know, this is not a monolithic community. We know that some people will want to be more discreet. And I think our first offering for our community is designed to, you know, in the early days of our lifetime, we don't believe that everyone in the wider world will even understand what daylight is. There are thousands of banks in America and people are very busy. Over time, as we begin to grow to scale and maybe like Grindr, we become a recognized name in the wider community, then I think we've got a different challenge, which is how do we continue to provide for the safety of our customers? Because it is more than just what the card looks like. It is what happens if you put my bank account into the payroll system and it tells my boss that I bank with a queer company. These are real pain points that we are thinking about very carefully, because safety and security of our community is absolutely top of the list. So right now we think we're doing okay at threading that line, but I think as we grow and our brand recognition grows, then that's going to be really, really important to get right.
Great. We'll be learning. You will learn the situation, how it is. You can always adapt to it, but I can imagine that you look at it closely, because it can still be an element, of course, of success for you. I also saw that you are a retail bank. That means you will not offer business accounts for the moment, yeah? But you also say, and this is, you will reach out to LGBT-owned and managed businesses. You tell them, reach out to us. What is there, the plan? Is it that you really want to have a kind of a link to them for the future, that you might issue also business accounts? Or what is there behind?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've learned about small businesses is that LGBT people want to spend their money with LGBT businesses. You know, we explored two loyalty programs, because loyalty and points are really big in America. So we looked at two different options. One is, what if we made regular contributions as you spend towards a charity of your choice? You know, a lot of people want to be able to give back directly. But the other one was, what if we gave you points at LGBT businesses? So as you spend your money at businesses that are predominantly owned or managed by LGBT people, why couldn't you take advantage of some points there? That's good for us. It allows money to stay in our ecosystem. It's good for those businesses because it can drive footfall and so on. I think right now, with COVID, nobody's really leaving the house. So the idea of asking them to go 500 meters further to shop at an LGBT inclusive store is not really how people are spending their money. Over time, and as we come out of COVID lockdowns, we very much focus on our goal of keeping as much money in our own economy as we possibly can. Because some of that will be the local coffee shop, right? That's a really easy case. But then there'll be things like Mr. B&B, which is inclusive and safe Airbnbs for LGBT people. Because, you know, you're turning up to someone's home, you want to make sure they're going to look after you. So I often think that there is an LGBT version of every business out there that is slightly different or very different, depending on what our needs are. And our goal will be to build a network of those over time, so that the more we can do to drive our customers to LGBT businesses, the richer they get, the happier our customers are. It's a win-win-win. And we're not here to be on the outside of the system. Building any company on the outside of an existing system is really challenging. We want to be there in the middle. And like I said, building an LGBT bank is a large endeavor that's going to take a long time. So we've looked at ideas around peer-to-peer loans for small businesses. How do we actually connect people with mentorship? So I think the things that we think of what a bank could ordinarily do for you, we want to throw out. I see no reason why we can't start blending together things that are uniquely LGBT to give LGBT people an experience that's right for them. So why can't a local independent business host a financial well-being summit for single people who have very different financial needs, so that our customers can go along, they can learn what they need to from a finance perspective, they can spend at a local LGBT business and possibly meet other LGBT people that are in a similar life stage as themselves. And we have opportunities to connect people together, because I think you know this, Ludo. At the age of 12, the first thing we discover we might be queer, the first thing we do is we start going out to find each other. Yeah. We holiday at 40s, we're probably going to want to do that. And at 80, we want to retire amongst ourselves. So we see our role as being a connector.
Yeah. I fully get it, yeah. I think what you certainly also will see, and I'm sure you know it, that what you try to do now for the retail, for the private individuals that are LGBT community, I think after a while you will recognize the same needs in the business, in the small businesses, but people are run by one or two or three people, business, I'm sure it will come. And I'm sure when that opens up, you will take that situation too, and that opportunity too, because it's there, I know. Because as I said previously, we are working with businesses. It's the same thing. It is just on the business level. It will work out, I'm sure. Now, one of my last questions is, you will start in the US, or did you start it yet? Is it already launched or not?
We have been making transactions all week. So I think we made our first transaction on Etsy this week. We bought some rainbow bracelets. So we'll put those in a frame somewhere. We officially launch our card program on Tuesday. So I don't know when this is going to be coming out, but that would be Tuesday, the 22nd of December. So our card program is imminent. And then we're taking our first 100 customers just after New Year. So we'll open up to, say, some friends and family this year. We'll start making some payments on the network. And then we'll be opening up throughout January and February with a large intake around daylight savings time, which gives us a fun branding opportunity.
But you are only in the US. So me in Europe, I cannot join. I see that is clear. The reason is probably that you are focusing on that market, which is a specific market. And that possibly you could also look at other parts of the world, but I understand that you're focused especially on the US because there you have more, let's say, potential to develop. No, I think so.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the economics on the kind of on the revenue side stack up better in the US. They have much less regulation around finances. Yes. So that means that to some extent it's difficult to make a splash in Europe unless you have a very sizable market. So it's got that sweet spot of a large enough market with favorable regulatory environment. But that is only our first point of call. Mm-hmm. So we're aiming to build the largest finance and lifestyle business for the LGBT community in the world. We're competing against Grindr right now at 600 million, who provide a single use case for about half of our population. Yeah. We see the need for LGBT banking to be in existence across just about every country. Different types of regulatory and social environments, obviously, but people are still going to need funding for kids. They're still going to need to be able to support themselves for transition. Those family dynamics aren't going to go away. Those retirement needs aren't going to go away. So we are aiming to build a template in the US that then we can use as the basis to make more regional approaches from that point onwards.
Well, I mean, I wanted to still to talk about 2020, the year with, I want to talk about Trump and about the COVID. I'm not going to mention that anymore. I'm fed up with it. I will not talk about it anymore. Let's look at 2021. I think that is the year for everybody, certainly for you. Well, Rob, I want to thank you for this talk. I think we learned a lot about what you want to do, and not only the, let's say, the official thing, but also what behind in your head, what you're doing it for the community. So I was there are two things. First of all, I was a bit afraid for this interview because I read also in my preparation that you love podcasts. I say, oh my God, me, the amateur podcast guy, he's going to talk to this guy who is the super, he knows everything about podcasts. I hope at least that you are not too disappointed. Anyway, I think from my side, I found it a very interesting talk for an awesome adventure that you've started. And you are right. I mean, what you said, gay is for life. It's not just for June. Yeah? It's for all the time and for everybody. So let me thank you once again for this talk. Very interesting for us. And for you, your family, and in fact, for all the people you know, have a very Merry Christmas, a good start of 2021, and a great future. Thank you, Rob.
Thank you very much, Ludo. You've done a great job. And thanks to Pavel, yourself, the entire team. I hope you guys all have a safe and prosperous 2021.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. See you.
See you, buddy. Bye.